कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। By leaving, the king, being so insulted, picked up a lifeless snake with his bow and angrily placed it on the shoulder of the sage. Then he returned to his palace. So in this chapter, Parikshit cursed by a Brahmana boy. In the last two, three verses we have been hearing about the unprecedented activities. As it is explained here, Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of Krishna. And he comes in the family of saintly kings. And in fact, when Parikshit Maharaj went out to check the condition of his citizens, the citizens were all full of glorification for his lineage. For how his grandfathers were great devotees of Krishna. And Krishna in fact served them. In fact served them personally. So the question arises, how can such a king coming from such a lineage behave like this? So Prabhupada very beautifully explains in several of these purports, very wonderfully. That's why the Bhagavatam is very deep in offering understanding of the depth and nature of the behavior of a devotee. We cannot fathom these truths ourselves by our own endeavor. If we were to read only the shlokas and translations, we might thoroughly get bewildered if it was not for the purports of His Divine Grace, His Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. So we would like to throw some light on this purport with the blessings of Janmashtami Prabhu. Prabhuji, you are comfortable? Would you like to have a chair? Have a chair to Prabhuji. Yeah. In the materialistic circles, this type of dealing of tit for tat is very common. It's not at all uncommon, very well known. Just like you hear the story in Panchatantra of how once once a fox invited a crane to his house for eating, and then he gave him something in a plate, you know. So the crane became very offended, isn't it? And then later on the crane called the fox to his house. And then he gave something in a big jar with a long neck. And the fox was going round and round. He didn't know how to eat from that. So this kind of tit for tat is very common in material circles. In fact, the whole world is filled with such politics that like some one particular family insulted another family in some marriage party or something. And then they will remember it and note down carefully. So that they will not go to that family's events in future. So then there is a separation between the families. Yeah, there's a quarrel. So the image, the prestige, the status is all very important in the material world. And in a small, slightest insult is very strongly remembered, and one tries to take insult. Just like Draupadi committed a small mistake of giggling when she saw Duryodhana slipping and falling in the Maya Sabha, and for that, what a serious retaliation that Duryodhana wanted to do. He wanted to bring that woman to the central public assembly and disrobe her in front of so many Kuru elders and so many other courtiers sitting there watching. So we can see how people take the insults very seriously to their heart and how people retaliate. In the middle circle, this kind of tit for tat is very, very common. Now, it's not only in the material circle, like Krishna explains, asau hatamaya shatruhu hanishye chaparanapi ishwaroham mahambogi siddhoham balavansuki. In the 16th chapter, Krishna explains, a person is always calculating in the business circles. How much money I have today? Idam adhyamaya labdham imam prapsye manoratham idamapi idamasti idamapi me bhavishyanti punardhanam. I have so much money today, tomorrow I will make so much more money. And then, who are the people who are my competitors in the field? And what is the way to pull them down? If somebody has gone ahead of me, I will pull them down. So in this way, in this world, people are always in a mode of calculation of who did what to me and how I can retaliate. It can be good or bad. Like in marriages, if somebody gives you a gift for 1,000 rupees, then they note down and keep it. And when they go to their house for the next marriage, they give some gift for 1,000 rupees back. So people weigh or value the things accordingly. In the same manner, bad also, they want to give in return. You give that bad to me, then I will give it back to you. This is tit for tat. No, nobody, it's very rare to see someone wanting to forgive someone for some mistake. Generally, the principle is tit for tat. Even after one becomes religious, what to speak of somebody on a totally mundane platform? In the five koshas, annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, vijnanamaya, anandamaya. The pranamaya, the second kosh, is a stage where there is defense, attack and defense. So that is the second stage. Where one always is fearful of the enemies, at the same time, one also wants to attack the enemies also. Just like it is said, all living beings in this world, they are doing three things. Just like that honeybees, you know, the honeybees, when they are drinking the honey from the honeycomb, three things they do. One is they drink honey, and when they see that the other honeybees are drinking more honey, then they sting them. Pang, they sting them. And then after stinging, then they go back to drinking. Then that honeybee becomes angry with this honeybee. Then he turns back and he gives a sting. Tang, he gives. So, the honeybees get stung and drink honey and give stinging. These three things happen with every honeybee. Similarly, in the material world also, the living entities are struggling hard to earn more, accumulate more, enjoy more, and while doing that, they have competitors. And when they become greedy and insecure by seeing their competitors progressing ahead, then they sting them, cause them some trouble. And they get stung back because of tit for tat formula. Or sometimes even if they don't sting, still they get stung because others are greedy for them. Like that. That is a material world. So this is material circle. But even in religious circles, even if one becomes religious, still this mentality doesn't go away so easily. The practical example is of one Kaccha who went to learn under Shukracharya. So he went to learn this Mrita Sanjeevani mantra. This Mrita Sanjeevani mantra is a mantra by which you can make people rise from the dead if their bodily parts are not broken away. If the head is not cut, you can bring a dead person back to life. So he was learning it from Shukracharya. But Shukracharya had a daughter who fell in love with him. And he told her, I can't marry you because you are the daughter of my teacher. It is not proper for me. What will the people in the world talk? You are coming for tuition to do this kind of loving affairs? So he said, no. So she became very angry and she cursed him. She said, this mantra which you are learning from my father, this one come to help for you when you need it the most. And immediately he gave tit for tat. He said, you are cursing me? He told her, you will never get married to a Brahmana boy, although you are a Brahmani. So he also cursed her back. So in this way, You find in this world people cursing and counter cursing. Actually, sometimes this kind of tit for tat can go on for many generations also. People remember. People remember something that happened to the great. You attacked my great grandfather, now I will attack you now. Isn't it? People remember. Your family did something to my family some 5 generations ago. And people have a record of it. Later on, they take action like that. And in this way, it can go back and forth, generation after generation. Just like you find Drupada and Drona when they had a quarrel, but you find that, you know, Drupada's, in one we can say Drupada was humbled. He didn't become humble, but he was humbled by Pandavas and brought as a captive in front of Drona. But Drupada maintained that vengeance and later on, you know, created Draupadi and Drishtadyumna from the fire yajna, and he arranged to kill Dronacharya. That is also actually avenging, vengeful attitude. So these are all examples of how people took tit for tat. They did not forgive away. Like you see, Diti had 2 venomous sons. Who are they? Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Although the whole world was horrified by these 2 sons, and although the whole world was fearful, these 2 personalities, they were creating such a religious atmosphere that nobody could live in peace in the world. In fact, all the demigods, all the human beings, all living beings, they were all praying to Brahma to go to Vishnu and do something. But Diti was feeling, what's so wrong about my sons? They are a little naughty. That's all. Why are they making a big fuss about it? She was thinking like that. That is why it is said in the scriptures, for a crow, its offspring is the most beautiful. Although the child crow may be the most ugly looking. In the same manner, Diti was feeling, they didn't do much damage. They are little naughty children. So Lord Vishnu arranged to kill Hiranyaksha. Lord Vishnu came as a wild boar. And he killed Hiranyaksha. Later on, the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu also. So, she knew very well that Lord Vishnu killed my sons. Why? Because of Indra. Because Indra wanted his Indralok back. So, Lord Vishnu killed my sons and took off the Indraloka and gave it back to Indra. So, of course, the demons and demigods, they both have respect for Vishnu. You will find in the scripture. They know that, you know, Diti and Aditi, and they are the parents of demons and the demigods, and Lord Vishnu is actually supreme for both. But they have enmity amongst one another, demigods and demons. So she thought that it's only because of Indra that my sons were killed. So she became very envious of Indra, and she wanted to kill Indra. It's because of you my sons were killed, now I will arrange to kill you. For that, she performed a vow. Actually, she served her husband so nicely, so sweetly, so respectfully, so politely, so humbly. Her husband became sold out, Kashyapa. Husband was so pleased, he said, my dear wife, I will fulfill all your desires. Ask me whatever you want. I am ready. This is the problem. The problem began. She said, my dear husband, I want you to give me a son who can kill Indra. And the husband lamented, what a mistake I did. I gave her a word that I'll give you anything. And then he thought, how Indra is so important. He is one of the greatest assets of the Lord for preserving the Brahminical culture all over the world. And he's a very, very important person. He's actually like a right hand of the Lord. He cannot be killed. And whatever Lord does is good for all. She was not convinced, she wanted. Anyway, he tricked her by offering her the procedure of devotional service. He told her, okay, if you do this vow, if you do this vrat, then you will get a son. Whatever you want will happen, don't worry. And then she followed the path of devotional service. Of course, the story goes on. Indra came to know that she is, you know, now going to conceive a child who will kill me. So Indra is no less. He came there and he started serving the stepmother. She's like a stepmother for Indra, Diti. So very faithfully he was serving her, and she was wondering how Indra wants to serve me. How did he get so much of respect and love for me? Because Indra had his own plan to kill the child. But what we understand is, this is also tit for tat. My sons were killed because of Indra, I will kill him now. This is tit for tat. So all this is in the material circle. In the spiritual circle, the aspect of forgiveness is greatly highlighted. It requires one to be broad-minded and magnanimous, and not to strike back when one insults us. In the series of these verses, we will come across one famous verse that says, Tiraskrita Viplalbda Shapta Akshipta Iti Prabhu Na Prati Kurvanti. It says, if somebody, it will be coming in the same series probably. So that particular verse says, a Vaishnava is one who, even if he is insulted, even if one is physically beaten, or even if one is killed, hata, it says, one will not retaliate back. And we have, this is not just a quote, there are examples for each of this. You will see that Chitraketu was cursed by Mother Parvati to become a demon. And he immediately came down his plane, with his plane and folded palms, he accepted the curse given to him, although he was not faulty at all. Generally, when someone, somebody points out our mistake which we did not do, it is very hurting to us. And we try to prove to the other person how I am not faulty, try to understand me. And if the other person doesn't understand, we get even more pained. Why you cannot understand me? Because everyone in this world has perceptions about everyone. So sometimes when we are misunderstood, it causes a lot of pain in our mind. What to speak of, like, you know, here you find Chitraketu didn't do any mistake at all. But he was thought of to have committed a mistake. And he was given a curse also. Can you imagine? He was given a punishment for something which he didn't do. And he tolerated. And he accepted the curse. And it was not some small punishment, stand up on the bench or something. No. Yeah. He has to become a demon for the whole, for a devotee to become a demon, can you imagine? For the next lifetime, you know, he became a demon. And he accepted it. That's why Lord Shiva glorified the nature of a Vaishnava by saying that famous verse, Narayana para sarve na kutaschana vibhyati Svarga pavarga narakeshu apitulya artha darshanaha. He said the Lord's devotees can be put in hell or heaven, or they may be offered liberation. But in all circumstances, they only want service to the Lord, and they are never fearful in any situation. They are happy and satisfied, he said. Similarly, Ambarish Maharaj was made an assassination attempt by Durvasamani. It is an assassination attempt, can you imagine? A huge demon was created who was about to kill Ambarish Maharaj. And he didn't take any action. He was very confident, if Krishna wants me to die, I will die. And the most interesting part of Ambarish Maharaj's pastime is, although the whole world is talking about how Durvasamani offended Ambarish Maharaj, and how he was wrong and everything, if you ask personally Ambarish Maharaj, he never accepted the fact that Durvasamani offended him at all. He felt what Durvasamani did was perfectly justified. He was convinced that yes, it's a mistake on my part that I didn't attend to my guest properly. I went to drink some charanamrit in the interval time and Durvasamani was not well attended. So his attempt to try to kill me was perfectly all right. And then when Durvasamani was, chased by that chakra all over the universe, and he was very patiently waiting till he returned back. When he came back, he gave him prasad. And then afterwards, Durvasamani requested him to eat prasad. Then he ate prasad. So This is the height, the greatest of all the examples, height of all examples about the nature of Ambarish. You will find Yudhishthira Maharaj also showing a mild nature and a forgiving nature in many, many examples. Like when Duryodhana was captured by the Gandharvas, Bhima was very happy. But Yudhishthira Maharaj was not happy. He requested Bhima and Arjuna to go and save them. Similarly, in another occasion, Pandavas came to know that Draupadi was kidnapped by Jayadratha when she was in the forest and Pandavas had gone out. But when Pandavas were capturing Jayadratha, Yudhishthira Maharaj gave a prayer warning. He said, "You may capture him, but don't kill him." So Bhima actually had caught Jayadratha by the hands and neck, and he had a chance. He took out his sword. He was about to cut off his neck while Arjuna warned him, "Bhima, remember, our brother ordered us not to kill him." He said, then he tied his hands and kicked him to go to Arjuna. "Okay, you take him." Like that. So you will see Bhima, very extremely aggressive. Very aggressive. Even when they were in the court of Dhritarashtra, when the Pandavas were completely humbled, they were on their hands and knees. They had to keep their crown down. They had to remove their upper garments. They had loose hairs, and their heads were hung down. And they had staked everything, including Draupadi also. And they were all sitting in that sabha like slaves. At that time, Bhima was murmuring to Arjuna. He was telling, "Why should we face all these things? What is the need?" Right now, he said, "If all of you five brothers, if you are prepared, come, let us attack immediately Duryodhana. Let everyone take the arms. We will take our arms. Let us fight it out. We are Kshatriyas. They are Kshatriyas. What is the need of, you know, bowing down and saluting them and, you know, living like this in shame for the whole world to watch us?" So Arjuna said, "I don't know what is dharma, but I am very confident that whatever Yudhishthira Maharaj says is dharma. We have to follow him." So Yudhishthira Maharaj is an example of extreme mildness, and Bhima is an example of extreme aggressiveness, and Arjuna is in between. So Krishna gave him Bhagavad Gita, that's why. So you see that, you know, Krishna could guide Arjuna to fight the battle. So it was only because of Arjuna's subduing Bhima could keep quiet. And you can find the similar behavior you can find in several events. As I was telling you, it requires a very magnanimous heart and a broad heart to be forgiving, especially even those who do harm to us. Even those who harm us, those who insult us, to be forgiving, it requires a very great heart, really great heart. See, there are many things we may do. Like if somebody insults us, you know, we may cry tears and tolerate. And inside the heart, we may be fuming. Or somebody insults us, you know, and we may think about it loudly and may think that maybe I have been misunderstood. Maybe in another occasion I can clarify if they ask. Be like that. Or if somebody insults us, we may not take it at all. Like it is said, those who are wrapped up in bodily consciousness, we should not take their words very seriously. It is said, like Hiranyakashipu is shouting at Prahlad, but Prahlad never took it up seriously. There is no use, you know. Because when we should take the word seriously, if the words are coming from a wise person, then we have to take those words very seriously. Otherwise, those who are demoniac, who are wrapped up in bodily consciousness, they have no good sense. Prahlad never took those words very seriously. He kept on giving good advice to his father. So, Yudhishthira Maharaj was also a very exalted soul. He knew, even if somebody like Jayadratha, somebody like Duryodhana, somebody like Dushasana, if they are misbehaving, that is because of the three modes which are making them dance like puppets. They are simply play toys in the hands of three modes. They are uncontrolled in their mind and senses. So, what Yudhishthira Maharaj would do is to safeguard himself and his brothers and mother from the damages that Duryodhana, Dushasana might cause them, but at the same time not want to retaliate back or harm them. That was his behavior. Similarly, you find when the five Pandava's children were sleeping in the night, and they were mercilessly butchered by Ashwatthama. And the news reached Arjuna and Draupadi. Draupadi broke down to tears. She practically fainted. You can imagine, for a mother to lose her five beautiful children, the Pandava children, they are the descendants of Pandavas. So Draupadi was so broken hearted. In order to pacify her, Arjuna told her, do not worry, right now I will go and I will capture Ashwatthama and I will behead him and I will bring his head and put it at your feet. And you can stand on the top of his head and you can take your bath. He told her. So he pacified her. And of course he went along with Krishna in the chariot and caught Ashwatthama. And Krishna actually told him, kill him. So Krishna was telling Arjuna that you have to kill him. This fellow, because you know, in the Vedic times, the punishments were very straightforward. If somebody has killed someone, they have to be killed. A murderer should be killed. So still Arjuna tied him up like an animal and he brought him. So when Draupadi saw, because of her good heart and soft-hearted nature, which is called as Vamaswabhavam, so she saw that and said, oh, he is son of our preceptor. He is a brahmana. He should be treated like a spiritual master. In fact, he deserves to be offered obeisances. And besides that, she said, you are planning to kill him, this person. Please think for a moment. Kripi, who is the wife of Kripacharya, or mother of Ashwatthama, she said, Kripi, why did she not enter into the funeral pyre of her husband? Because she has a grown-up son to protect her. Keeping this in mind, she didn't die in Sati. But if we kill him, then we will make her continuously keep crying for all time to come. I am crying like that continuously because of losing my children. Do you want to see her also crying like that? This is empathy. She had that empathy. She could put herself in the shoes of Kripi and see that she should not suffer like me. This is paradukkha dukhi. To contemplate on others' suffering and not cause them suffering. This is the mood of Draupadi. And she said, if we offend this Brahmana's son, and if we enrage the great souls, then all our family, royal family, will be burnt to ashes because of their anger. She said, don't kill him. So she took that side, forgiving side. Of course, pastime goes on how, you know, Bhima and Krishna were saying, kill him. And Draupadi and Yudhishthir and all others, they all said, don't kill him. So here is a very classical conflict resolution problem, which we will discuss some other time more elaborately. But here, we are only throwing light on this one point. What is the point? Draupadi's compassionate nature. She didn't want it for that. You killed my children, now we will kill you. She didn't do that. She had a Vaishnava heart and a compassionate heart. So, but it requires a very great heart. Now some people say, if one does not retaliate when you are insulted or harmed or something is done to you, then you have a weak heart. We don't have a strong heart. Sometimes in the buses or trains we go, you know, somebody, you know, shouts at you or insults you, and all people then turn to you and they see how you respond. You've seen that? Yeah. And if sometimes you see two people, you know, one fellow saying something, other fellow says something else, third fellow, that fellow says something, and back and forth it goes on, and then finally it ends up in catching collars and slapping and punching on the nose, pounding. It happens. So and generally the public enjoys this type of fight. In India you will find there'll be a big crowd around, gathering around them. Everyone is interested to see what's happening. Let us have some fun. People are watching. And if one fellow doesn't fight, you know, then they feel, oh, he's a coward. He has no courage. That fellow gave him a good beating and this fellow didn't retaliate. Maybe he's a weakling. He's counted as weakling, like that. So, many people might say, like Prabhupada says about this, like some people complain that Prataparudra, after he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became too mild. He lost all his fierceness, all his aggressiveness, and all his masculineness and kshatriya tendencies, because of which he was defeated, or whatever some people say. And in Bengal, you will find some people, although there are Vaishnavas who glorify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are a class of people who criticize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be, you know, spreading this mild nature. So generally, the people in the karmi material circles, according to them, one should retaliate back, one should, they might even quote Chanakya, Shato Shatyam Acharetha. Shato Shatyam means if somebody is cunning, then you should also be cunning. Whatever they do to you, you should do that back to them. You should retaliate. So is this mildness a sign of weakness? Or does this mildness make a Vaishnava stoop down or become insignificant or become or make him cowardly? From a Vaishnava point of view, this kind of mildness and forgiveness is like a crown or a jewel on the head of a Vaishnava. For example, Gopal Chappal, he had arranged Durga Puja paraphernalia items on the backyard of Srivasa's house. It was a deliberate aparad. It was focused on, you know, humiliating Srivasa Thakur. Actually, when we hear this pastime, sometimes it is little difficult for us to comprehend what is such a great humiliation. Because in the modern times, people are anyway not religious. People are not very pious. Many people are, their only religion is sense gratification in the modern times. So it may be little difficult for us to understand these pastimes. But in those times, if one is a Vaishnava, you know, to have some items like meat and kumkum and all this Durga Puja worship items on the backyard of one's house, and if people come to know, then one will be counted as a hypocrite. Hypocrite, because you are saying you are a Vaishnava, but you are worshipping all kinds of, with all kinds of dirty, bloody paraphernalia, you are worshipping Durga. What kind of Vaishnava are you? So the whole world may laugh at him or spit on him. But what did Srivas do? How did he respond? When he came to the backyard of the house, he saw and he called all the people and said, just all of you see, I am a pretender. Just see for yourself. Of course, nobody believed him. They knew that somebody has done, and then that fellow got a punishment also. You see that. So a Vaishnava doesn't become minimized or small by becoming humble, by taking a humble position. In fact, humility is courage. It takes great courage for one to be humble. On the other hand, those who simply retaliate back with great passion, force, often they retaliate back owing to the mode of passion, and it may lead them to a situation where they will have to regret for their own actions later. Later they may have to regret for their own actions. Because the Niti Shastras also say, when we are attacked by someone, either verbally or physically, we should always we have to be cool-headed and make an assessment of our own strength first. And we should know, in what way should I retaliate back? What would be the best way I can retaliate back? If I want to at all, how should I retaliate back? Because if I try to retaliate beyond my strength, then I can land in trouble. Say for example, suddenly a pahlavan comes towards you with a very hefty body and is going to punch on your nose. Then you also try to get ready to punch on his nose. That is not a very wise thing, isn't it? Because you are very skinny and he is very stout and strong. He has well built body. So one of the easiest things would be to surrender to him. Tell him, sir, wait a minute, you know, it seems you are very angry with me. Please tell me why you want to beat me up. Somebody told you or anything. Or if he is not hearing you, then you have to seek help. You know, you have to have some allies help who is equal to him. Then you can hit him, right? Just like you find Duryodhana understood that he is no combat for Arjuna. But he was looking for someone. Then he got Karna. So he made friendship with Karna so that Karna can equal Arjuna. You see that. This is also one of the diplomatic plans of a Kshatriya in those days. So either we surrender, when we surrender then we'll be saved, or we get a combat who can beat him up. So one has to think, it is said. Don't retaliate without thinking. Make assessment of your own strength. Make assessment of, and also one can think about why this person is doing what he is doing. If a person is attacking us verbally or physically, what made this person so angry? Lose temper, lose control. Huh? Think about it. Huh? So we can think about, where did I go wrong that has led to this kind of, miscommunication, misunderstanding, and arousal of anger and that kind of situation. One should think like that. One should always think of the consequences of one's actions. If you don't think about it, then we may behave, which you call as a snap decisions. Making snap decisions is a very dangerous thing. When you make a snap decision, we may regret for it later. Subsequently, we will regret. But if we think and act, then we can save a lot of damage. That's why one should think twice. Look before you leap, as we say. Think twice before you act. Think twice before we say anything or act in any way. So, that is why you find Mother Sita is telling a story to Hanuman also about how once upon a time there was a bear who was sleeping on the top of a tree, and there was also a human being who was also sleeping on the top of the tree, and a tiger arrived there at the foot of the tree, and the tiger looked up, and I think both were sleeping. Both bear was sleeping and the man was sleeping, and the tiger actually wanted. So the man was awake, and the tiger told the man, "I am very hungry. I want to either eat you or eat the bear. I think first the bear was awake. So the tiger was asking the bear, "Can you, put this man down?" The bear said, "No, I cannot put him because it's not proper for me. He's sleeping. And to take him and offer you is not proper for me." And after that, the bear went to sleep and the man was awake. Then the tiger told the man, "See, I want only one of you. I don't want both. You push the bear." Then the man kicked off the bear from the top. And the bear came falling down, but he caught hold of another branch. And then he held himself onto the branch. Of course, the tiger was disappointed. So, naturally, you'll understand. Now the bear will be angry. "Are you fool? I didn't offer you as a food to the tiger. But what kind of good sense you have that although I saved your life, you didn't save my life. You are kicking me and you are throwing me down." So naturally, the bear now would have taken another opportunity to pick up that man and hand him over to tiger. Correct? But he didn't do that. So Sita Mata tells the story. She says that we don't have to do tit for tat. She says. And on what basis we can avoid it for that? Is it because of our timidity? Is it because of our cowardliness? Is it because of some fear we have that we may be later on attacked back with that fear that we should not do it for that? That question is very important to be answered. Because it's not that a Vaishnava is timid. Like here, you'll find Parikshit Maharaj will be cursed after some time by Sringi, And Parikshit Maharaj had full power to curse him back. Similarly, when Garuda was cursed by Saubari Muni, Garuda was a great devotee of the Lord. He's a carrier of the Lord. He had the ability to curse him back, but he didn't curse. Chitraketu had full ability to give a curse back or counter curse. He didn't do that. So, why a Vaishnava should not do? Is it out of fear or timidity? No. A Vaishnava knows whatever is happening to me is happening under Krishna's supervision. Krishna is watching me and he is aware of it. And he is orchestrating the situation to happen like this. The person who is offering the curse or insult or physical beating or the person who is receiving, both are being watched by the Supreme Lord. The Lord is watching and he knows who is right, who is wrong. And nothing is offered to us in this world without a reason. And nothing happens in this world without a reason. God is watching. Many times, we have given some insult to someone in the previous life and now we get it back now. Or we have beaten up someone and we get a beating back. So a Vaishnava knows that actually, whatever is happening under Lord's wish and Lord is watching. So I can tolerate. Now, we were talking of many examples of how the Vaishnava literature teaches about tolerance. To the extent, even Lord comes and exemplifies, like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Amoga was, you know, insulting him. You are eating the food of 10 people. But Chaitanya never felt any envy towards Amoga at all. See, if somebody insults us, now we become envious of them, right? We start criticizing them, blaspheming them, and we start talking ill of them behind their back when somebody insults us. But you find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Amoga criticized him, in fact, Lord Chaitanya went to Amoga's house because Amoga was struck down by cholera because of his own offense. In those days, things would happen instantly. You know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would touch someone and embrace, immediately, you know, like a 10,000 volt electricity. You would be infected by love of God, and immediately you will see him, you know, throwing his hands in the wind and crying tears of love of God, you know, his heart palpitating. And he will be crying in love and he will enter into the village and make all people into Hare Krishna devotees. It was like that. Similarly, if somebody commits an offense, immediate reaction. You find, you know, Amoga immediately got a reaction, getting cholera, and he was bedridden. Similarly, you find Gopal Chakravarti's nose melted off after 3 days, you know. Things happen very quick. Because when Lord himself comes, you know, here, things are very fast. In our life, things have to happen by sadhana bhakti slowly, gradually. Both come slowly. Results of offenses and results of sadhana bhakti. It takes time. So, when Amoga was lying on the bed, Lord Chaitanya went and touched his chest and said, "My dear Amoga, you are a Brahmana. Your Brahmana's heart is meant for the jealousy and envy has no place here in your heart. Why do you allow such things to enter?" And you will find Amoga, how he behaved. Immediately he jumped off from his bed and all his cholera was gone instantly. And then he started crying tears and lamenting, "Alas, alas, how did I commit offenses to you?" And he started slapping himself. So much so that, you know, his both cheeks became plumpy and reddish. And Gopinath Acharya had to come and stop him, catch both his hands. And Amoga lamented and fell down at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He became a pure Vaishnava. Immediately you find. So, Mahaprabhu shows how, you know, he didn't punish him, rather he rewarded him with love of God, although Amoga spoke like that. But at the same time, there are certain instances when a Vaishnava cannot avoid retaliation. It is very important to include that in this talk today. Otherwise, our talk would simply be on a very idealistic platform, and we will, when we are faced with situations, we may be landing up in trouble. So I have taken two conversations of Prabhupada. You can hear this conversation. This is from February 19, 1977, Mayapur, Prabhupada conversation. Harishauri Prabhu is saying. Prabhupada is saying, "Vaishnavas, they are actually living only for the benefit of human society. They have no other desire." Harishauri Prabhu is saying, "Yes, Prabhupada, no one can stop this movement." And Prabhupada is saying, "No, it's not possible. That I am certain." And Harishwarpu is asking, "Will things get physically violent, Prabhupada?" And Prabhupada is saying, "Well, the violence there may be, it doesn't matter." And then Prabhupada is saying, "Self-protection must be there." And then they are talking about, how here he is saying, Prabhupada is saying, Harishwarpu is saying, "Because now with these kidnappings, it seems that we may have to," which means devotees are kidnapped by the deprogrammers in the West and many other places. So the parents would arrange some deprogrammers. Say, deprogrammer, who's a deprogrammer? They would want to, according to them, the Hare Krishna movement is a bunch of people, they would call it a cult. Cult means, you know, following some set of rituals and rites and everything. And they are very closed. And they don't interact with the outside world. They live very secluded lives. And in the name of making them normal, according to whatever definition they have of normalcy. So, the deprogrammers would, like one Mataji, she wrote an article in BTG also. She had become a first class devotee, you know, wearing sari, tilak, kantimala, proper disciple, everything. She was taken away by deprogrammers to her house. She was locked up in a room, and her parents made her wear mini skirt and, you know, all types of such dresses. And they started feeding her meat. And initially, this Mataji refused and cried. And so the parents tried to force her to be deprogrammed. So they had told the deprogrammer, "We will pay you a fortune, but you have to make her like she was before. She has to go to, you know, clubs. She has to go to parties, movies, move around with her old friends. She has to become thoroughly materialistic like she was before." So for 3-4 days, this Mataji opposed like anything, and she realized, it's too much for me to fight against these people. Then she started becoming very cooperative. She told her parents that, "I want to go to movie, please take me. And I want to go to party, take me." And she started wearing the type of dresses they wanted her to wear. And then she behaved completely in a materialistic way, just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami, you know, "Behave like a Vishayi when you go back home." She behaved like that, and parents became very satisfied. They paid a big amount to the deprogrammer. One fine morning, this Mataji ran away, back to the Hare Krishna temple, like that. So these are deprogrammers. So they were kidnapping devotees. They were kidnapping full-time devotees from the temples. At least in India, we don't see that. Sometimes parents generally come and cry. They try to request the son to come back home. You know, till now, it hasn't happened. Because sometimes people are very demoniac, and they, you know. Harishapu is saying, if you go to the court, then it is self-defense. And Prabhupada is saying, yes, at least give him a good lesson. Definitely. Yeah. And Harishapu is saying, we fought with demons once or twice before that have attacked the temple. We ought to give them a good hiding. And then he is saying here, Harishapu is saying, now that we are being attacked, Prabhupada, like this physically, and Prabhupada is saying, so we must attack them also. Harishapu is saying, should we actually have a training program so that our and Prabhupada is saying, no. Harishapu is saying, no, we would know how to defend. Like you were saying, Varnashrama, and Prabhupada is saying, yes. Harishapu is saying, in Varnashrama system, there must be a Kshatriya and everything like that. Prabhupada is saying, yes, yes. So Prabhupada is agreeing to that, having some Kshatriyas. Prabhupada, everyone need not be trained in fighting. And then should we actually start a train of some of our men so that they know how to fight? And Prabhupada saying, yes, why not? And Harishapu saying, because we have men who know how to use guns, and they practice a little, but on the whole, our devotees don't. They are not trained up to be able to defend themselves. And these people are professional gundas. And Prabhupada, what is that? Kivat, they practice self-defense, and Harishapu is saying, not Kivat Prabhupada, it's karate. Prabhupada is saying, karate, good. Harishapu is saying, there are different forms of the self-defense, Prabhupada. Yeah. So in this talk you find Prabhupada is saying that if there is a danger for the devotee's body, then devotee should defend. We may ask, why Ambarish Maharaj didn't defend, should we defend? Actually, that way, if you see in Shastra, you find there are Ajgar Vritti Vaishnavas, you know, who would never even beg alms from anyone. Madhandirpuri never begged alms from anyone. He just sat in Vrindavan near Govindakund and continuously chanting Hare Krishna. And Krishna himself came and gave him, you know, some milk. Or you find the Avadhut Brahman in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam. You know, he was just lying down in the forest. Whoever came and gave him food, he accepted. So we are certainly not like that. When we go for yatra, we carry nice prasad. Packed up and we carry. Similarly, the great Vaishnavas, they are so dependent. You see Jadabharata, when the robbers tried to offer him as a Narabali to Kali, he didn't protest at all. Can any of us say, if somebody takes a chopper to cut off our neck, we will not run away? How much courage we have. So we haven't become pure devotees, so we certainly have to defend this movement. And Prabhupada also says in the another conversation here, you will find, so here, this is also continuation which comes later. Prabhupada. We want to see whether the result is there. I understand in that way. Phalena parichayate. You may spend 10 rupees more or less, it doesn't matter. I want to see the result, that's all. I was asking Tripurari that whether this opposition was, whether the opposition has hurted our book selling. He said no. Is it all right now? Any problem? Prabhupada is asking. Tamalakshmi Maharaj is saying, Prabhupada, it hurts initially, but then we rebound. On the whole, it does not hurt. Prabhupada is saying, that we want to see. Tamalakshmi. Yes, Prabhupada, on the whole we are successful. Prabhupada. Tamalakshmi Maharaj is saying, I'll give you an example, Prabhupada. Now they have learned that the way they can hurt us is through book distribution. They are understanding that. For example, now in about 3 or 4 different cities, they are going to the airports where we do our big book distribution. And 3 or 4 people are engaged to break up all the sales. This happened in Chicago. It happened in San Diego. And it happened in Minneapolis. All within the last 2 to 3 months. And Harishwari Prabhu is asking, still it's happening there? Tamalakshmi Maharaj. In Minneapolis it is still happening. And in San Diego it is still happening. They learnt it from the Yanov case, that Yanov issue in Chicago. The deprogrammers then wrote to each other that this is a very effective means to cripple the activities of Hare Krishnas because they will yield to this pressure. Prabhupada, that they will try, but we can find out another avenue. Tamalakrishna Maharaj, yes. Well, that's what we did to, that's what we did, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada is laughing, yes. Tamalakshmi Maharaj. So now they are frustrated. On the whole, it has not hampered our book distribution. And Prabhupada is saying, that we want to see. That is the result. That's all. Tamalakshmi Maharaj. Because as soon as they stop one thing, we go to another one. We got another idea. Prabhupada is saying, that's right. How many places they will stop? They cannot stop us. And Harishwari Prabhu is saying, if we give them a good beating, they wouldn't come back again. And Tamalakshmi Maharaj saying, sometimes we did that also, Prabhupada. there was one man, very, very big demon, who was breaking up all the sales in one airport. So finally the devotees hired a professional man. And this professional watched how this man went home. And after about a month of observing him, this professional man hid himself near the man's garage. So when the man came back home, after disturbing our sales for 5 months, the professional bit him very severely. Prabhupada, that's nice. And Tamalakrishna Maharaj. And then he never came back again. Prabhupada, that is tit for tat. Tamalakrishna Maharaj. Yes, Prabhupada, he never came back. So Prabhupada, so we should adopt that means. Anyone who is opposing, give him a good beating. Tamalakshmi Maharaj. That's what they do. And then Harishwari Prabhu. As long as we do it very discreetly, Prabhupada. No, this was very nicely done. That hiding in the garage, and as soon as, oh, beating. Give him a punch, he's saying. And Tamalakshmi Maharaj is saying. And he could understand. There was no proof, but he could understand very well why he was beaten. Prabhupada is saying, yes, yes. And Harishwari Prabhu is saying, it is just like when they get taken before Yamaraj at the end of their lives, it says in the Bhagavatam, they understand all their past sinful activities. Now they are getting punished for it. And Prabhupada is saying, yes, that is allowed, that is within Krishna consciousness. Tamalakrishna Maharaj. They are doing that because the policemen and others are beating our men in the airport sometimes. We are getting hit and beaten. Tripurari sometimes was punched in the face. Many times it has happened to him. He has been beaten for distributing. And Prabhupada, we can also do that. Tamalakshmi Maharaj, yes. And it is so horrible that when this happens, just like, and then Prabhupada is saying, no, no, no. Best thing is that we find out another venue. But if there is possibility, we can also give. It is very nice. Example, it's a very nice example. Fight and give him some lesson. There are many examples, even in Shastras, Prabhupada is saying. Even the Pandavas did it. there was a Rakshasa disturbing Bhima. So he became like a female, and that female, she came and gave him a good lesson. Prabhupada is laughing. You know who it is? Kichaka. Yeah. Actually, Kichaka was eyeing on Draupadi when Draupadi was a Sairindri in the Virata's assembly. So actually, all the servant maids, they were looking very normal, but Draupadi was very glaring because she was a queen. She looked like a simple servant maid. So Kichaka one day suddenly looked at Draupadi and he asked his sister, "Who is this? I never saw this beautiful girl. You sent her to my palace along with wine and everything." So when Draupadi went to offer him some things like a servant maid, immediately Kichaka tried to misbehave with her. And Draupadi ran away. And then she told Bhima. Bhima was in the kitchen. Was cooking. All of them were in different roles in Virat, you know. And Draupadi was talking at great length to Bhima. She said, "You have to beat up this man, Kichaka. Otherwise, you know, I cannot live in this place peacefully. Whenever I walk here, go there, he keeps eyeing on me." So Bhima said, "Don't worry. You tell him that tomorrow evening you will come to the Rangamanch. That's a dancing theater. You will come there and he can meet you and you both can have a good time together." And she said, and when, after a lot of pressure from Kichaka, Draupadi spoke like this, and Kichaka was very happy. At last she has obliged to me. Because he was a very sweet talker, very nicely talking to her. So next day Kichaka came there. So Bhima had dressed up like Draupadi, with long braided hair and sari and everything, and he was sitting. So when Kichaka saw from behind, he saw this girl and he thought, "Oh, Draupadi is waiting for me there." So he came from behind. And when he came near and he turned around, it was very sturdy Draupadi. Very strong and well-built Draupadi. And then the fight began. It is such an interesting, I have given it in the book, one of the books, it's coming, in our EBG. It's so interesting it is. So if you see the way he beat him up so badly, it was like he made his whole body like a football. And he inserted his hands inside. All hands, legs, everything went inside his body. And made a big lump ball out of it. So Prabhupada is quoting that. And the Harishavari Prabhu is saying, "Yes, Prabhupada, Lord Ramachandra also chopped off the nose of Ravana's sister." And Prabhupada is saying, "Yes, yes, that's not bad. That must go on." Yeah. So now we heard this Prabhupada's conversation now. Does it validate our passionate retaliation with people whom we come across in our lives? Sometimes some years ago, some of our devotees had gone in van party or bus party or something. So they were saying that, you know, somebody was causing some disturbance and one of our devotees was trying to slap him. So I was not happy with that. I had told that, you know, you should never raise your hand with anyone, because then we should know our strength. So what happened in result was that one of the devotees, because he slapped, that fellow went and he brought a big group of people. And they were certain community people. And practically there were 50, 60 of them. They started surrounding the bus. They said, "We will set your bus ablaze. Who are the people? Bring them." So one of our devotees from here was sent and he met those community people. And he also called the top police people and everything. It took practically a whole day, morning to evening, to pacify those community people. And then he wanted all of our devotees to bow down and seek forgiveness. And devotees bowed down and sought forgiveness from them. And then at last they were pleased. "Okay, you guys are not proud. If you are proud, we will burn your bus." And all that. Anyway, why I was telling this point, we should not take Prabhupada's conversation out of context and try to come up with our own conclusions in order to suit our passionate nature. Actually, as Prabhupada is saying here, towards the end you will see Prabhupada is saying, it's better for us to go to another venue. Prabhupada is saying, another venue. Okay, you are disputing in one place, you are getting a big fight. Okay, go to another place. There are many things Shastras teach, like Sama, Beda, Dama, Danda. Like if you are doing disputation in one place, somebody is coming and opposing. You can speak some sweet words to them. Please, please, all of us. And if it is not happening, then give them some gifts. Take out a Bhagavad Gita and give them as a gift. Please take this gift. One for you, one for your friend, and keep quiet. You know. Or if they are still protesting, then you can slightly move to another place. One thing is, we should never get physical in our retaliation as far as possible. Why? We are a mission, we are a movement. That we should always remember, we are not a single person. If you are a single person, you know, you may fight with somebody and they may fight with your family and the fight is over. But when we are representing Prabhupada, we are representing the ISKCON mission. ISKCON mission gets bad name by our behavior. Generally what people do, when two parties are fighting, if one party belongs to a spiritual organization, then people say that you should have more sense control. And people expect that you behave more politely, moderately and properly. And if other person is even rough and tough, still people don't mind because they think he is anyway one amongst the common populace. They think like that. And when Prabhupada said these things, why he said it? For example, even in Mayapur at one time there was an attack by several 100 Muslims and everything like that. So certainly we need some Kshatriyas for self-protection. Like you will see, Yudhishthira Maharaj, when he came to know that Dhritarashtra is sending all of us to Varanavat, Lakshagraha, immediately the question came in his mind, a common sense question. Why only we are being sent? Why Duryodhana and company? Why they are not coming? So he asked Bhima, he asked Arjun, he asked Kunti. Nobody had answer. But Vidura had answer. Vidura knew. So Vidura spoke in a different way, in an allegorical way, something, and he told him that they are plotting to kill all of you Pandavas. Yudhishthira Maharaj knew that. And Yudhishthira Maharaj already knew that Bhima was poisoned also before. But you find that Yudhishthira Maharaj is so tolerant. He somehow or other makes sure that the brothers are not killed. They are protected. At the same time, he is not bent upon causing damage to others. This is a very great quality. Same mood Prabhupada also exhibits here, you see here. Prabhupada is saying that good, they gave him a beating. But he was not killed. Prabhupada never said kill him or something. But he was given a good beating if need be. But we should do something for our own self-defense. That's most important. Like, you know, when we, like nowadays you see in all the big temples, there is a big problem of terrorists coming and putting bombs. So there has to be tremendous security in the entrance of the temple. We have to watch out people. Similarly, we get robbers who come and steal the properties of devotees. There should be some disciplinary action. And the punishment should be offered by authorized people. Not, imagine if a devotee is wearing saffron dress, shaven head, wearing tilak, and he is found to be beating some chapal chore in the near the gate. Then all the passers-by are watching. Sadhu is beating another man. Generally, sadhu is supposed to be weak and another man is supposed to be strong, and he is getting beaten up by sadhu. People wonder. So it's not a very befitting activity for a sadhu to do. So there should be a committee, there should be a group of people who will do that, administer the disciplinary action on such people. That's what Prabhupada said. As soon as he spoke about Varnashram, immediately Prabhupada agreed. Very good. That's a good point. Yes, there should be a class of men, Kshatriyas, trained in fighting with guns, trained in karate and all that. And they should protect themselves and they should protect others. They should protect the community of devotees. Any community of devotees anywhere in the world can face such dangers and they need protection. And that is understandable. As far as possible, a devotee adopts the policy of non-violence, not unnecessarily. At the same time, a devotee is not unwilling to surrender to Krishna if Krishna wants violence. Just like Arjuna was told by Krishna, for the sake of Dharma Yuddha, we have to fight this battle of Kurukshetra. And Arjuna was ready, prepared for that. Yeah. Coming back to the context here, we find that Parikshit Maharaj was a pure devotee of Krishna. And when he came to the hut of Samikrishi, Samikrishi was sitting in trance, completely absorbed in trance. And he was a little suspicious. Is he just closing the eyes to avoid a guest? Sometimes you see a guest and you run and hide somewhere, you know. So because they will take away my time, you know. Similarly, he thought that, you know, Samikrishi is closing the eyes in order to avoid a guest at his door. But he wasn't very sure. So, like any average materialist would do, He wanted to retaliate, and he just picked up a snake and put on the neck of Samyak Rishi. So it is explained, first of all, pure devotees don't feel excessively thirsty or hungry. There is a verse in 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Dehendriya prana manodhyamyo, like that it begins. That verse says that pure devotees don't feel excessively thirsty or hungry, but Parshu Maharaj felt thirst. That itself was unprecedented. And pure devotees will never become angry, even when they are insulted. But Parshu Maharaj became angry. Again, it is unprecedented. And pure devotees will never do tit for tat. That verse is said also. Tiraskrita abhipralabdha shabdakshitva iti prabhu. But here you find him telating. So all these things can make us conclude that Parikshit Maharaj, what he did was simply an orchestration of Krishna. Krishna is using Parikshit Maharaj's body like an instrument in doing these things so that ultimately the Bhagavatam will come to be spoken. That we can understand, as Prabhupada says here. The ordinary course of dealings, this was not very unnatural. But in the case of Maharaj Parikshit's dealing with a Brahmana sage, this was certainly unprecedented. It so happened by the will of the Lord. So Lord, when Lord desires something, he can use his devotees to do. And the devotees also cooperate with the Lord, not caring for, you know, what the world will think of me. You know, my name is going to appear in the Bhagavatam and people are going to read that I did such a thing. Can you imagine? Imagine if one of us, you know, our name appears in such a literature which will be read by millions in the time to come. But ours is a, you know, very negative role, where you are doing something like this. It's like a blemish, isn't it? But Parikshit doesn't care for the blemish because it is going to be pleasing to the Lord. What he is doing here is pleasing to Krishna. So he's ready for that. Like you find Lord Shiva running after Mohini Murthy. He knows that's what the Lord wants him to do. In order to teach the world some valuable lessons. So in this way, the Lord uses his devotee like a perfect instrument. The devotee has zero resistance to the Lord's using him in his service. That is the nature, that's the meaning of a pure devotee. So he, like we say that verse, you know, once I had gone to his own Radhanath Maharaj and talking to him about this verse, Trinada Pishani Chena. So I was telling Maharaj, this is very difficult, this Srinada Pishanichana. You know, you always tell in your lecture towards the end, you know, one should become servant of the servant, of the servant and all that. We have heard it several times, why it doesn't sink into our heart? Why it doesn't come into our everyday practice? And then he asked me, he said, do you want to know something? If I tell you that, you will faint, he said. I said, yes, Maharaj, I said. He said, Srinada Pishanichana is not the highest. He said, in fact, that is only second class, he said. The first class is Ashlishyava Padaratam Pinashtuma Adarshanan Marmahatam Karotuva Yata Tatava Vidadhatu Lampatu Matprananatastu Sayevanapra. Maharaj said, I don't talk about this because it is too difficult. So I talk only Trinadapi. He said, after some time I'll talk about that. He said, actually this Ashlishyava Padar. Ashishya Padaratam Pinashtama means, my dear Lord, I am your property. You may embrace me if you love me, and if you, otherwise you may put me on the ground and trample upon me or kick me away. Whatever you want to do, you can do with me. I am simply an instrument in your hands because I exist only for your pleasure. He said, this is even higher than Trinadapi also, he said. And when I heard it, I was shocked. Then he said, okay, go back and try to practice Trinadapi Shanichana. Grantra Chimad Bhagavatam ki? Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktavinda ki. Thank you very much.